as soon as you have the idea, someone already probably thought of the same idea. And it's just a matter of like who can execute faster. So you have to really be willing to take that first step literally before you're ready.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Shuang Esther Shan, and you're listening to Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. Before becoming a multi-million dollar beauty mogul, Anne McFerrin was trying to build her career as an independent artist. But her whole life changed when she came up with the idea to make magnetic eyelash extensions. Within 12 months, she launched her brand, Glamnetic, solving the common issues that makeup lovers face when trying to glue on their false eyelashes. Just after a year in business, Glamnetic earned $50 million in revenue and caught the attention of partners like Sanrio, Sephora, and Ulta Beauty. Anne is my guest today. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Thanks for having me.
So excited to have you here. I know that you loved beauty. You weren't necessarily in the industry, but you noticed that there could be a little more innovation with the way that we were applying our false lashes. Talk to us more about that.
Yeah, so I was honestly kind of stuck in my career path at the time. I was a full-time artist. I was making money painting people commissions. I actually graduated UCLA with a degree in psychobiology. But when I graduated, I was like, medical field doesn't feel right. Let me try my own like company. So I sort of just did my own thing with painting for a while. And I did it for about 4 years. But I felt like I was starting to feel momentum lagging because I would always have to be in front of the canvas painting in order for me to make money. And it was 8 hours of painting every single day, and I was by myself. So it was a very lonely endeavor. And I couldn't see myself doing it for the rest of my life. And so when I saw an opportunity to go into business, I had a lot of friends that were actually using Shopify. And I think around that time, it was like 2018 when I first considered it. And Shopify was having this like major awareness around it. A lot of people were like referring other people to start Shopify stores. And I was like, what is this Shopify hype? Let me check it out. And a couple of my friends had already made like a few hundred million on their store, which was crazy. So I was trying to understand what the lifestyle was being a founder. I had never been exposed to it before. I had just graduated college 4 years prior. And I was very curious and interested to understand more about it. And when I was really ready to make the leap into another career path, I thought to myself, like, what is something that I've always been passionate about? And that for me was lashes at the time, not magnetic yet, but I was looking into magnetic lashes because that was the only thing at the time that was innovative enough to find a sort of like white space for people who didn't know how to apply lashes. I noticed that a lot of my friends just didn't know how to apply lashes. And I was like, why is there nothing on the market that solved this problem? Magnetic lashes were the only product at the time that sought out to fix the gap there. The problem was with magnetic lashes, there was no like easy way to apply magnetic lashes. They were very hard. If you tried to apply them, they were like, you have to sandwich your lashes in between two layers of magnets. And it just didn't stay on. They would always slip off, and they were also like really arduous to apply. And so I kind of went down a rabbit hole on the internet, just trying to like research the product more and understand if there's like anything out there that would be a better solution that maybe nobody thought of. And I did stumble upon, you know, the whole like magnetic eyeliner concept. What was existing on the market wasn't executed well. It was maybe like in a pot form. And I wanted to create like a liquid form. And I also wanted lashes that were more glamorous. I really loved glam lashes because I felt like they opened up my eyes more. Also being from Asian heritage, I also felt like I always wanted to like figure out ways to like make my eyes look bigger because like I felt like all of my friends had these big eyes, and I grew up in school where I was the only Asian person in school, and I felt like I got a little bit bullied because of that. So I definitely think I had like an insecurity around it. So yeah, I kind of went down this whole product development pipeline to try to understand like how to create it, and basically spent about like a year and a half developing it. But I did all the research myself. Like I didn't have a mentor. I realized that every answer that you ever need to find is out there on the internet now. Like it's pretty accessible everywhere. YouTube was the main teacher for me. I would say YouTube was sort of the start of everything. And then from there, like it guided me to a lot of different websites where I could like learn more. And yeah, about a year and a half later, I came up with the prototype, which then got launched.
It's funny that you mentioned YouTube was your main source of knowledge. I do remember seeing you on YouTube and painting incredible murals for some of my favorite YouTubers. You have this idea. It took over a year to actually develop and research and really fine-tune the product. How do you stay motivated during that process and also stay true to that idea? Because it's very tempting to give up during that process.
That's a very good question, because I feel like some people get sidetracked. And I think a big thing, not even just in entrepreneurship, but in life, is shiny object syndrome. If you see something else that's better or like trending at the time, you're like, wait, am I like spending my time on the right thing? I was just kind of obsessed with this idea because, again, like I was a big lash lover and I just didn't see anything out on the internet or on the market that kind of provided a solution for it for people that struggled with lash application, which is actually most people. So I felt really excited about the idea. I felt like this felt like the right idea. I just felt it like to my core. I was like, this is it. So that was the vision that drove me, because I had a vision for what the feeling would feel like when I felt like I solved this problem. And so I stuck to my guns on it, and it did take over like a year and a half to develop because I had no idea what I was doing. And I just ran into like a lot of different vendors too that weren't the right vendors. Like I sampled over like 100 samples or something, like over 150 vendors. And it took me a while to understand like what to look for to find the right one. And finally, like maybe two created the right sample that I was looking for. And that's when also like when I coined the name Glamnetic, because that was the original name, like Glam Magnetic was a combination of those two words. So it just felt right. I also wanted it not to be a lash brand, like, because I didn't want the word lashes to be in it, because I felt like Glamnetic could be something more than just lashes.
Totally. It's also that draw of magnetic energy that you draw people with your product.
Exactly.
That's incredible. Over 100 different products and iterating. What is your tip when you're going through that process? How do you keep track of everything? How do you stay confident when you're negotiating with these producers, essentially?
Yeah. When negotiating, I think I just go with the method of like, they need me more than I need them, because I have like, there's so many more vendors to choose from and like, they want my business. So like, how do I negotiate in a way that I'm like, hey, like I'm literally just starting off the business. Can you like, give me a break here on the first, you know, few runs. And I also started very small, like only started with 100 units per SKU when I first started.
And of course, like while you're iterating, you also have to manage your own finances, which I think also is a very intimidating area of business. How did you make sure that you had your own runway when you're trying to develop the product, the design and everything?
Yeah, I think it depends on the product. So the nature of the product and the industry or the niche that you're trying to go into. Definitely some of them are a lot more capital intensive than others. Also, like if you're going to color cosmetics, it's even more capital intensive than something like lashes, which is more considered even like a makeup accessory than it is like true makeup. So for us, like we actually have very low budget. Like I maybe started off with like $10,000. And then I tried to really make that stretch as far as I could. So that would mean that I would have to do everything myself. I couldn't hire another person to do the things I needed to do. So that's why things took a lot longer as well. If you're not buying someone else's time, you're going to have to use your own time. So I only spent like maybe $5,000 on samples. Like when you added it all up, samples are actually pretty affordable, especially if it's from overseas suppliers. It's pretty affordable. The part that gets a lot more expensive is like marketing costs. So like once you actually launch and all of the photo shoot, if you want professional photography and like having like a real photo shoot, that can go up really high. So that's why I actually just learned how to do professional photography by myself. So I was the photographer. I bought my own camera. I brought like all the props and stuff on Amazon, and then I just did it myself. So you can make things as cheap as you want. It depends on what you're aiming for when you launch. Like for me, I wasn't aiming for the best brand ever created, like with the best branding or anything. I didn't understand anything about branding at the time, but I did understand what people wanted. I understood the customer because I was the customer. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to focus more on like the product innovation piece, and then like the branding, the packaging, photography, all that stuff can come later. I also wasn't shooting for the moon. I just wanted to make like 10K a month. That was literally my, I was like 10K profit a month. I'd be happy. And then it ended up like far exceeding that, which, yeah, I didn't expect. I think it's good to start with low expectations when you're going into something like this, because when you go in with high expectations, being like, I'm going to be a multi-million dollar company by the end of this year, you kind of get ahead of yourself. You need to really keep your eye in the present. I think that's something that's really important too as a founder, is like you get too ahead of yourself sometimes and you end up tripping over yourself because you're already thinking in the future of like, I'm already making $1 million. But no, like you are a bootstrap, self-founded founder that like has very minimal capital to start with, which is awesome. But you have to think like that.
Yeah. I know that you had that $10,000 revenue target monthly, but you far exceeded that by actually reaching $1 million revenue per month and more. But I love that you were saying that you have to stay realistic with your goals and also save money while you're trying to build up your business. I understand for branding and seeking out models, you actually had a really good way of finding models to pose for Glamnetic. So talk to us about using Bumble BFF for reaching out to potential models.
Yeah, that was another way of me trying to be very bootstrappy. Because again, like I'm literally, just think about me. Like I was 26 when I first started and, you know, I had a lot of girlfriends. And I also realized like something about having a lot of girlfriends is like, girls love it when you do their makeup and they just love like their photos taken, you know, so they just like want to feel beautiful. And I was like, oh, wait, why don't I just like do that with, you know, Glamnetic? And just I went on Bumble BFF and I just swiped on like all the girls that I wanted to be models for me. And then I'd be like, hey, do you want to come over? Like, I just started this brand, like I'll give you free lashes and also I'll do your hair and makeup and I'll take professional photos of you. And like, who would say no to that, you know? So they just like came over, hung out, like we chit-chatted like as friends too. And then I would do their hair and makeup. And that was like how I got my initial first models. I also asked a lot of friends. I'm like, hey, do you have any friends that like are models too? Like actual like professional models that would like be down to like support me right now? And that's another thing. You have to use your network. Like people are so willing to help you when they know that you are following your dreams, you know? They're so excited that like someone is breaking out of the mold in your community to like do something big. And that was really cool to see that with my friends, like all really came out to like support me. Like I had like huge back orders like in December because I didn't expect to sell so much. And so we ended up like overselling. And so I had to like had like a massive rush shipment come in and I had over like 5,000 eyeliners that needed to be stickered and boxed. And then I had four friends come over and just like help me like all day to do this. And it was just like a pizza party. Like I just ordered pizza for everyone and we were just all laughing and conversating, but also like had this big like assembly line going on. And that was so fun. So like those are memories I, you know, hold on for forever. I don't think we'll face, you know, similar issues like that anytime soon because now we know like how to order and stuff. But yeah, those are things that I look back and I treasure. I'm like, those were the funnest times.
Sounds like you had so much fun during those periods, but also support from your friends is so important when you're making these giant risky decisions. Before Glamnetic, you actually studied psychobiology, thought about a career in medicine, and then you decided to become a full-time artist. What's your advice for making those giant pivotal decisions and actually taking the plunge?
Yeah, I would say take the first step before you're ready because you're never going to feel like you're fully ready. Because when are you ever going to feel fully ready? You know, like, is it 5 years from now, like 10 years from now? You know, like at that point, you already kind of missed the boat with like your idea. The thing with, I think, this entrepreneurship world is everything moves so quickly, like trends and everything. So like as soon as you have the idea, someone already probably thought of the same idea. And it's just a matter of like who can execute faster. So you have to really be willing to take that first step literally before you're ready because that other person will. It's a very competitive industry and people are getting better and better and better. I'm seeing like brands, better brands come out more than ever that I hadn't seen before, like more innovative brands as like technology has advanced even further. And try to believe in yourself. I think that's the main thing. You got to really believe in yourself because no one really is going to believe in you. And I feel like I do see some people who are like wanting to start brands and they come up to me and they ask me all these questions, but it seems like they're looking for answers everywhere else but within themselves. Like they're coming from a place of lack, and they're coming from a place of the answers are somewhere out here and it's not within me. But like, you really need to feel like everything and all the answers that you will ever need is within you. And the answers are all on the internet also. If you actually like are confused about something, they're right there. You don't necessarily need to wait for the perfect mentor either.
Yeah. Really take ownership of the journey or the business that you want to start. Yeah. Very interesting to hear about the beginning of Glamnetic. And I'm very excited to dig into the expansion part of the journey as well. But first, I would like to take a moment to thank you for tuning into the show. Wherever you are getting your podcast, go ahead and give Shopify Masters a follow. And if you haven't already, please give us a review with your feedback. Our team loves reading them. Thank you so much. So, of course, we know that you identify this problem that makeup lovers have. So there was this product market fit that you found incredibly fast. The next hurdle is obviously getting your product out there and sharing the story and getting people to actually try out your product. So how did you approach that?
Yeah, that was very organic. I'm already very naturally a curious person. So I'm curious about everything. So obviously when I'm creating something like this, I'm like, okay, immediately, what are people thinking? Even as I'm going along the process of sampling, I'm asking my friends to try them out. And I'm like bringing them along the journey of testing. So like I've had some friends who've tested like so many different prototypes because I'm just like really curious about that. And I think that's very important. You need to be inquisitive and not just depend on your own opinion, but the opinion of others, because you could be skewed in a certain way and you're not like considering like all angles. And so that really did help. And I think by the final prototype, when I handed it to somebody and they were like literally freaking out because they were like, this is the craziest beauty product I've ever tried. I'm like, oh my God, okay. Like it got me so excited and so much more confident about my own product. And that's another thing, you have to really believe in it. Like you have to fully believe, like die for your product vibes. I was very intense about it, but I was like, I will die for my company. Because I just felt like it, you know, it was the first time in my life where I felt like I'm fully doing this on my own accord. This was fully my idea. This is fully my brainchild. And this is my purpose. And I felt like a sense of purpose for the first time. And I think that's also another amazing thing about entrepreneurship that maybe people don't talk about enough. Like, obviously, a lot of people are doing it because they want money. But I think it's for me, like, it was the purpose that it provided. It gave me, like, fuel in such a different way. Like, I never had so much mental energy in my life, but it came from a place of passion. You have to emanate that, you know, people have to feel that. And I think people felt that from me, not just my friends, but like even when we started, you know, on social media and I was basically running ads with me talking about the product. And that's what really blew us up, was like me talking about the product. This was before TikTok. So it's kind of before people would do these like quick like ads sort of on TikTok. Like I would be the one doing that and talking about my own products. And, you know, people just loved the instant transformation that it provided and how quick and easy it was.
I remember those ads and I remember it grabbing my attention and actually making me pause during my scrolls. It's truly magnetizing people to your product. I think a lot of people will be curious to say, like, you knew to have videos in your ads and they were very concise and compelling. For now, if I'm starting a new business, how do I do that with my new product? How do I make a good video?
Yeah. Oh my God. It took me a while to like be comfortable in front of the camera because I'm like actually a little bit more of an introverted person. And it takes me a little bit of time to like get out of my shell with people. And so it was really awkward to just sit alone in my room and talk to my phone. But I got very used to it because I would just practice all the time. And once I started doing it pretty much like every night after a work day, and I would film like 40 videos a night. And I did that for like 2.5 years. So it just became kind of second nature. Now I can like turn it on super quick because it's just like muscle memory, but it takes a while for you to get that muscle memory. I know a lot of people are like uncomfortable with that, but it's so important now more than ever because, you know, we're in the age where like people are literally,
I don't even feel like I talk to my friends as much. I find out about what they're doing on social media. It's like I don't even, you know, like the conversations have gotten so much less, and now it's more about like checking in on them on social media, which is it's kind of sad, but like that's just how the world is moving. And so you have to move with it, especially now more like even more so than 5 years ago. And so now it's I think it's more important than ever as a founder to be the face of the brand. Like it's that's so important. I feel like that's what people connected with for me is my brand story and just like my founder story. That was really what people gravitated towards, even more so than the product. Obviously, you have to have a great product, but I think having a face behind the brand that like can tell their story behind it like helps so much more. So yeah, I think I would practice.
You mentioned 40 videos a night that you were making for a year or two. Why at such a high volume? And is that like what founders should aim for?
Well, because we were running a bunch of ads on Instagram, Facebook, all of Meta pretty much. And you have to have like multiple iterations of different ads and to test to see which one's going to perform. A lot of them don't end up like becoming scaled up, but some do. And like some we end up spending like hundreds of thousands, even millions on because it works. So you have to like try different lines, different scripts, different, I don't know, like changing my background, changing my hair, changing my top, like just different things where it could grab people's attention. I don't have to do that anymore now because like our brand has now been more, we started a whole new category of press on nails. And that now has shifted to more that category since there's like this massive like rise in popularity. And people are now like starting to stop going to salon services and move into like DIY beauty. And so that's sort of our bread and butter. Think about lashes, that's DIY. Think about nails, that's DIY. But because nails, it's like mostly hands, I don't have to be in it as much. But when we were doing more like lash focused stuff, like I was definitely the one to talk about it all the time. So it just depends also on the nature of your product. Like, you know, for me, I had to really use my face there. But yeah, I think it's very important to figure that out too, like what is going to sell your product online. That's very important because some people, it's not necessarily even someone talking to the camera. It's maybe it's like demonstrating something. Maybe it's just hands doing something. Like you have to figure out what that clever thing is that makes people want your product.
Wow. Yeah. I think we talk about A/B testing in ads, but I feel like you were A to the last letter and repeat. So that's truly, truly amazing. Now you're also expanding into the new product category. What was the decision process like? What kind of data were you looking at to understand, okay, now we should move into press on nails?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because it wasn't necessarily like data driven, more like an observation of what was going on. I felt, again, like we really wanted to cement ourselves as like leaders of like DIY beauty, and nails were a natural extension because it's like you do your nails and your lashes. And I feel like people could get their nails done even more than their lashes. And at the time, there's just no trendy like press on nails on the market. Like what you see on your Instagram feed, like the things you get served, you don't really see that those in like press on nail form. You have to like go and show your nail tech, and then she like takes 2 hours, 3 hours to draw it on your hand. And then you're paying like $100+ for that set and hours of your time and pre-planning all of that. So it's just like, why all of that stress and time? So I wanted to take the stress out of the process and just create press on nails that were actually like thicker, like more durable, that felt like acrylic quality, but also was like on trend. And then also, my ideal scenario was also us like launching pretty often, which we do now. We launch like once a month, and we are always like giving people like the latest and greatest styles. We have a lot of very like evergreen styles that people always come back for, and we get like a lot of repeat purchases just for that style because some people only want to wear like a French tip or something. So we have options for everyone. What we like to do is do like a modern twist on a classic design so it's not boring. And also do, you know, all of the solids that people really love, different finishes like glazed, velvet. We want to cover everything. And then on top of that, we're throwing in IP collabs. So we just did collabs with Harry Potter and we did Hello Kitty. And those are massive successes. And we're going to do more going into the future. We have two lined up end of this year that are going to be really cool. So yeah, we just want to continue to push the envelope and become, you know, continue to become like the leading brand for on-trend press on nails.
Yeah. I mean, those are incredible brands to be collaborating with, Sanrio and Harry Potter. What's your advice for founders to actually establish those connections and also develop those relationships over time?
Yeah, I think people underestimate LinkedIn. You can actually find a lot of the buyers on LinkedIn, like people who do licensing for various IPs, and just like find their contact or like message someone in that IP, and then they'll lead you to somebody else to message on LinkedIn and just kind of do that. If, you know, that's if you don't have a PR agency that you work with. You know, once you get to like higher revenue, I do recommend like getting just like a PR agency. We don't actually hire any agencies, and PR is really the only agency that we use because everything else is in-house. Which, by the way, I highly recommend you do all marketing besides PR in-house, like digital marketing, all in-house. Like going with an agency is just really, you know, they kind of do the bare minimum and they charge you a lot versus you like training your own video design team and having a head of growth and all of that. We found like way better results doing that. Definitely LinkedIn, and try to like just be scrappy with like, you know, making these relationships and just like showing them like what your brand looks like. And because at the end of the day, they also want to find really good brands to partner with because they get a cut. They get a, you know, there's a royalty rate. So they get a cut of all of the sales you make. So like the more partnerships, the more money they make. So it's actually, you know, in their interest as well.
Yeah. Well, such practical advice. I do have to ask you, because as an artist and as a founder, you constantly have to come up with new ideas. How do you stay creative, and where do you get your inspiration from nowadays?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I feel like I've matured so much in the last 5 years in terms of my taste, like in everything, not just like visual art, but music. And I've also gotten a lot more into like the spirituality realm, like manifestation and meditating and all of those things. And I feel like they all kind of coalesce together to kind of inspire me in a lot of ways. And also like working on, I know it sounds woo-woo, but I have been like working on like raising my vibration through meditation on a regular basis, and just like studying more about like ego and how to control your ego and know when it's controlling your mind versus when it's actually like your intuition. That plays a big role, I feel like, in my creativity and making me feel like consistently inspired every day and happy. I think that's the biggest thing, because I do find like a lot of founders can get a little, you know, sad. It's like, it's definitely one of those things that if you're not working on yourself emotionally, then it's going to hinder your ability to work within your company. You have to work on yourself, and it's basically proportional. Like if you're a happy founder, your company is going to be happy, because then your company and like your employees are going to feel the vibes of you being happy or down or not. So it kind of sets the tone for the culture of the company in a lot of ways. So that's why I think it's so important, like mental health and wellness. I started lifting really heavy weights like, I don't know, like a year ago. And so like my body has changed through like lifting weights, and I feel so much better overall because of that. I do things that challenge you and like make you grow and help you like strive for more, because I'm always like setting PRs and like trying to like lift more. And I do spiritual retreats with my friends. So, and we dabble in psychedelics and like stuff like that. So I think it's like kind of trying to do as much as you can to like really get to know yourself on a deeper level and travel, you know, take breaks and travel, you know, like especially once you start hiring people out, like 3 years in, we're like, okay, now we have, you know, 60, 80 employees now. So it's like, once you start getting more people to help you, like take that vacation, like really do things that make you feel happy and whole, indulge in those things and like have hobbies. Because again, this is a marathon. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And people have told me that, and I'm like, what does that really mean? Okay, now I get it. Now 5 years going, like 5 years in it, because e-com moves so fast and like there's just so much going on all the time. If you're just only working 24/7, like you're going to burn out. Burnout is a real thing. And I've seen founders burn out, and it's not cute, because you're then out for like 6 months or more, and you're ruining yourself. So it's very important to like make yourself healthy and whole.
Yeah, you got to take care of yourself before you can take care of your company. Well, thank you so much for being here, and very excited to see how you grow and how Glamnetic will grow as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
That's Anne McFerrin, the CEO and founder of Glamnetic. Our show is produced by Gogo Zoger and Megan Coyle. Our engineers are Matt Schwartz and Miku Betlam. Benjamin Gottlieb is our managing producer. And I'm your host, Shuang Esther Shan. Come hang out every Tuesday and Thursday to catch brand new episodes of Shopify Masters. And if you're still listening, go share this episode with another business owner. Thank you so much.